today's show is proudly sponsored by Minding the Gap. You guys all know that mental health for dancers matters. You're on board. You want to see the culture in your studio change, but where do you start? Enter Minding the Gap. Minding the Gap is dedicated to seeing mental health regarded with the same seriousness as physical health in dance culture, and they come armed with solutions. Whether it's helping you craft policies and procedures that protect the mental wellness of dancers and staff, consulting to build a robust mental health program in your school or company, or providing mental health skills workshops for your students and teachers, Minding the Gap has you covered. They bring the expertise of the best dance mental health experts in the world to you. For more information, visit www.wearemindingthegap.org or click the link in the show notes. Hello, dancers. Today, I spoke with the resilient ballerina, Jazz Bynum. Jazz is a company core artist at Ballet West. She began training at the age of 5 with Hudson Repertory Dance Theater's after-school program and continued her training in Maryland Youth Ballet and Dance Theater of Harlem's residency program at Kennedy Center. Jazz has also received her BFA in contemporary performance with an emphasis in ballet from the Boston Conservatory. Her goals as a ballet dancer are to become a principal dancer, be part of the change to normalize Black faces in ballet companies, dismantle microaggressions in our workspace, and be an example for young brown and Black ballerinas that they do belong. In addition to becoming a principal ballerina, Jazz wants to publish a few books and open her own wedding and event planning business. Jazz lives to always spread love and positivity. In our interview today, we talk about Jazz's experience with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, injury recovery, and her own personal toolbox of mental health resources that keep her resilient. Her story is really inspiring and a great listen for any dancer going through injury recovery. Please remember that I am not a mental health professional, and anything you hear me say on the show is based on my personal experience and perspectives and should not be considered medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use any of the content to diagnose you or anyone else of any mental or health condition. If any of the things shared on the show resonate with you, I encourage you to talk to your doctor or click the link in the show notes to find the best healthcare professional for you. And before we get started, I also want to mention that anything said on the podcast reflects my dance experience as a whole and not any one teacher, studio, or company. The opinions shared by my guests in this episode are their own and come from their individual viewpoint. This was such an uplifting episode with Jazz, and I can't wait for you guys to listen. So here you go. Hello, hello, dancers. Welcome back. Today, I'm really excited to introduce you to someone you might already know on Instagram, the resilient ballerina, Jazz Bynum. Welcome, Jazz.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm really excited to talk to you and get to know you better and learn your story and share it with everybody. So let's dive in. I'd love to hear a brief overview, first of all, of your relationship with ballet. And if it's relevant and you feel comfortable, what role your mental health has played throughout your dancing career. And lastly, how you became to be the resilient ballerina and what that means to you.
Okay. So I grew up dancing. Dance, specifically ballet, has always been a part of my life. I think when I was like 7 or 8, I declared that this was what I was going to do professionally. And I have had moments that I was very deeply involved in it and moments that I was away from it due to injuries, which I later learned were because of a hypermobility disorder that I was diagnosed with as an adult, called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I began my training in New Jersey. That started as an after-school program that was run by, at the time, Hudson Repertory Dance Theater. And the director there is also now one of the directors at the Ailey School. And I did that until I was about 7 or 8. And then we moved from New Jersey to Maryland. And I trained with Maryland Youth Ballet. And I did Dance Theater of Harlem's residency program at the Kennedy Center in DC.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, and I trained at both of those.
That's a lot of big names.
Oh yeah.
That's exciting.
It was really, really awesome. And it was great to receive two very different thoughts of teaching ballet and training mm-hmm. ballet. Mm-hmm. And you know, as far as mental health is concerned, like I started to begin to struggle with my body and my body image probably when I was like 10 or 11. Mm. And it was really interesting because at my home studio where I spent most of my time is where a lot of that negativity sort of sprouted. Mm-hmm. But then on the weekends, I still had Dance Theater of Harlem that has instilled a lot of confidence and self-love mm. in me. So it was weird to have that battle, because one of the teachers that I grew up having at Dance Theater Harlem was Arthur Mitchell, who is one of the most amazing humans and legends that I've ever met in my life. And he was very adamant about having self-confidence, as well as Robert Garland, who became one of the main teachers that we had after a few years that I was there. And mm-hmm. between the two of them, you know, you almost could not have confidence.
Yeah. Wow.
And then of course with my mom, I mean, once she noticed the patterns that I was developing, she one was just like, yeah, no, we're not doing this. And two, she also loved me so much that, you know, she couldn't let me fall into that either. And so, you know, I began to find healthy outlets to navigate that space for myself. And it took a while and it hasn't always been easy, but it's been easier to push through, especially when things are a little harder mentally. Because one, I know it's something that I want to do. And two, I've built up different tools along the way. I'm also a person that I don't like people around me to be hurting either. So it also helped me to be able to find ways to help other people feel better about their circumstances. Like even in college, I started a support group basically for dancers that were going through injuries or anxiety or depression, or because I was going through my second MCL surgery and I didn't have my mom, and I was like, I need support. And also other people I was seeing were just not dealing with you know, injuries and mental health well mm-hmm. at all. And mm-hmm. so I was like, all right, let's create this space where we don't necessarily have to talk all the time if we don't want to, but we can just be with a person and not be alone in this space, you know?
Yeah. You know, dancing, a dance career after, especially after pre-professional training, once you get into that college professional space, can be really, really isolating.
Absolutely. Cause you know, you grow up training and you're mm-hmm. surrounded by all these kids all the time. You know, you go through the school together, you do summer programs together, and then even though you're always with people in the dance world, but it becomes mm-hmm. a lot more isolated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's a very different environment.
Well, the stakes are higher in. You know, like the competition is higher. A lot of people have a mindset that it's a zero sum game. Like if you mm-hmm. get a part, that means I didn't get that part, you know, that kind of mindset. Yeah. So mm-hmm. that can be isolating. And then put on top of it, being the injured person in the company, that can be very isolating too. So yeah that's wonderful that you're able to pull those resources together. That's really cool.
Yeah. And then from there, that's pretty much where the Resilient Ballerina grew. I started seeing how my journey was affecting others, whether it was helping them to navigate their space or mm-hmm. They were getting inspiration, you know, whatever it was, it made me realize like that needed to be created.
Yeah.
And so then I started that page and it was pretty well after I had already gotten back into dance after the second ACL tear, but I really tried to focus on, you know, my journey and how I was working through getting back to dance and missing it and being okay with not being in it all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really cool this time, having gone through my ACL tear a third time, to be able to do it from start to finish. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not near the finish line yet, but It's been nice to be able to take my page the way I wanted to start it, by going from the beginning and really going through everything that I've been experiencing on this journey. So
So you've had 3 ACL tears. Any other like catastrophic major injuries to mention? Or
yes, so I, when I was 13, I had a bunionectomy where I had to get my foot reconstructed. My bunion was hereditary, but it's messed up the alignment in my foot, so I actually have 2 screws in my foot still. And then when I was 15, I had hip surgery. I had acetabular femoral impingement of the mixed type. And I also tore my labrum, so had to get my hip all cleaned up and repaired. And then I had the 3 ACL tears. The second, or the last 2 ACL tears, were ACL tears and meniscus tears.
All on the same side or separate?
All on the same side. Yeah. Wow. The foot and hip were on the right side. All the knees are on the left side. Okay. And then this one wasn't surgery, but I did, I fractured my elbow, I don't know, 3 years ago, I think, over the summer. I was partnering and got dropped. So, yeah.
Well, that leads us then to the hypermobility syndrome that you are dealing with day to day, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Yes. So you mentioned that a little bit briefly. So if you could, from your own perspective, understanding that you're not a medical professional, everyone, this is coming anecdotally from someone who's experienced living with the syndrome, but just give us a quick overview of what it is, when you were officially diagnosed, and how it kind of affects your day-to-day living.
So Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is a connective tissue disorder. There are 13 different types of it. I have the hypermobility type, which generally means that my joints and my organs are hypermobile. So my joints are prone to injury and have a lot of elasticity, and my organs are prone to rupturing in a lot of different ways. So while you have a genetics doctor that's kind of like your base for this, then you also, I have to go see a neurologist, a cardiologist, an ophthalmologist, an endocrinologist, a gastroenterologist, and I think I'm forgetting one, but you have all these specialists. I know. So you have all these specialists that you have to see to make sure that there are, all your organs are functioning properly, that valves are opening and closing the way that they need to be. And so after my second ACL tear, I was already back to dancing full time. I was still cross training, you know, building up strength, and I've always eaten, you know, relatively healthy, having a well-balanced diet and everything. But at that point, since I was so active, I couldn't maintain my weight, and not that I had any specific goal or anything, but with it, as active as I was, I was more concerned about why I was looking the way that I looked, just because of that wasn't normal for me. And so I went to a primary care doctor, and they referred me to a genetics doctor, because I was having a lot of GI pains and a lot of neurological symptoms. And so that became the last resort. I worked with a gastroenterologist and an endocrinologist for about, I want to say like 3 or 4 months, trying to figure out what was going on. And the basis of that was trying to get my, sorry, little gross, but my constipation under control.
No, you know what? Like this is all important. It's all important information, because how many dancers out there right now are hearing your story and going, wait a minute. because being hypermobile from an orthopedic standpoint, aesthetically, is a huge pro for us. And so there, I'm sure, are lots of dancers out there who haven't been diagnosed yet, perhaps, who might hear your story and say, wait a minute, how does this dot connect to that dot? You know?
Right.
So, yeah. Continue.
And so I had constipation that I just like could not get under control. I mean, it was really sad. Like it was like, if I had a movement once a week, that was a great week, wow. which is so bad. So
yeah,
we tried to tackle it from that route. And over that 3-4 month period, the doctors had put me on a whole bunch of different medicines, laxatives, like, mm-hmm. and nothing worked, like nothing moved. And I was like, this is insane. So
yeah,
then I ended up getting referred to a genetics doctor, and she was, you know, she did the physical exam and she was like, mm-hmm. okay, now this makes sense why you have all these symptoms. And it's funny, but I feel like doctors always look at things in their field, which makes sense.
Sure.
You know, that's what they're
trying to do. Through their own lens. Yeah.
But with Ehlers-Danlos, there's so many characteristics that fall under that umbrella mm-hmm. that you have to be able to look at the whole picture. You know, there's not one symptom that's going to say, oh, you probably have this.
Right.
Because for me, like, I didn't get my triggers through my hypermobility. Granted, I did have previous injuries, but mm-hmm. I'm a dancer and I'm an athlete, so you know that was going to happen no matter what.
Yeah So it easily hid probably for a while, that diagnosis, because of your athleticism and the requirements of ballet.
Right. And I have a very, very high pain tolerance, so things that were bothering me really weren't that bad, but like I knew they weren't normal, so I was mm-hmm. always like, mom, doesn't feel right. And
but you weren't
so we
like
would
crying
go,
in pain or anything either.
No, I mean, like the constipation, of course, was extremely uncomfortable because you can't have all that stuff sitting in your stomach. But, you know, even that, it was just like, you know, mm-hmm. I had been dealing with it for so long. At a point, I was just like, you know, I'm uncomfortable, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So then once I was diagnosed, with Ehlers-Danlos and, I was started working with a neurologist, and she told me to add salt in my diet because I mm-hmm. didn't cook with salt ever. and that made a huge difference in terms of eliminating my migraines I was having, because I'd get them like every week and like 3 to 5 days a week. Like it was insane. And so I worked with her and a dietitian, and between the two of them, I mean, my body just became happy and well balanced, a lot of the symptoms that I was dealing with like went away. And I had to cut things out that actually a lot of them were my favorite things, but which is really, really sad, but there are foods with Ehlers-Danlos, like just normal things like a white onion, you know, that trigger organs differently mm-hmm. than the mm-hmm. average person. So
interesting.
I'm constantly learning my body that way, you know, what mm-hmm. affects it, what doesn't. For me, a really big symptom is bloating. And so I really try and pay attention to the things that I'm eating. And I'm like, oh, I had this week. Maybe I shouldn't keep putting this into my body, because my bloating gets crazy. I mean, it hasn't been bad, but sometimes I'll get these flare ups where, I kid you not, I look about 6 to 7 months pregnant.
Wow. And
there was one summer I was at Kotsban for their summer intensive, and I named about 24 food babies. That's how big they were.
Wow.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. But now it's so now day to day, you are, you know, trying to fuel yourself in a way that doesn't cause a flare up. Is that what you would call it, like a flare up?
Yeah, physically? I would. I feel like as far as GI things are concerned, that's probably mm-hmm. my biggest symptom. Also, inflammation is a really big thing for me. Even now, while I'm recovering from surgery, waiting for the swelling to go down has just been a process, because with Ehlers, like your body just naturally swells. Even before being injured, we had, you know, our summer series. I was in compression sleeves all the time. Because, I mean, it's really hot here in Utah, and we were performing in July. So it was like 90 to 110 every day. And so, you know, in order to keep the swelling down and be able to wear point shoes, I was wearing compression sleeves all the time. So, and even when we're doing like a nutcracker run, even though it's cold outside, I really can't wear that many warm-ups when I'm getting ready for a show, because if I heat up just a little too much, that's pretty much a done deal for me. Yeah.
Okay. What about, how does the syndrome play into your orthopedic history? Like, is that like one of the root causes of the tears and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So even if I wasn't dancing, I probably would have torn my ACL and meniscus at some point. If you look on the Ehlers-Danlos Society's webpage, they have a whole bunch of different stories of people who've dealt with it just in their normal lives. And there was this one woman, I think she has like four daughters and they all have it as well in different forms. But, I don't believe she was an athlete, and she tore her ACL multiple times. And then once she had that repaired, then she tore her meniscus. And I was like, that's crazy. And so I think it was a symptom for me, but I don't think it's one that was really paid attention to because of being an athlete and, you know, having to perform at such a high level. But you know, it's definitely a characteristic of it. What makes it hard is that there isn't a lot of research for it. Like, they're constantly learning about it because everyone's case is so unique. Like, there isn't one way to have Ehlers-Danlos, and there isn't one
way
to have
classic case.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, so even with the ACL surgery, I actually had a very different procedure slightly different procedure than my other two. And the surgery that they created for Ehlers-Danlos patients, or, you know, hypermobility patients for an ACL tear, this one has only existed for 5 years, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
And so it was created right around the time that I was having my second one, but I think even while they were in those creating stages, I had already had my procedure, but I also wasn't diagnosed, so it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Right. Yeah. Cause your doctors wouldn't have known.
Exactly. So then so what they do now is they still repair the ACL the same, but then they also take 1/3 of your IT band and reinforce it around your knee so that your hip, knee, and ankle all rotate together instead of having it where like your knee down rotates further than your knee up.
Yeah. Interesting. And, has that affected your turnout?
It made it more.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm a massage therapist as well. So like I have this like ballerina / you know, body worker brain working at the same time. So that's fascinating.
And it's funny because I didn't think that it would have made such a big difference. But once I started doing bar again, I was like, this is too easy. Like, I actually have to remember not to turn out because I'm like, whew, like, we can't go that far. Yeah. But it's nice because it feels easy. Like, I don't feel restricted. And my right side has always felt completely fine. My left side, I always felt a little bit of like a torque when I was trying to turn out. So it's nice now to have that space and ability to be able to actually access my full turnout. And another cool thing about the procedure is that it changes the re-tear rate from 40%, which is like where a normal ACL repair would be at, to 4, which is a huge difference.
Nice. Love that. That's great.
Really cool. Yeah.
Good outlook. Yeah. That's a very good prognosis. Okay. So now we know a little bit about the syndrome. We know a little bit about your injury past, but we're here to talk about resilient ballerina. So let's talk about injury recovery. I'd love to know how that affects your mindset daily, if you have some tools in your toolbox you use to help yourself heal in this time right now. I know you guys, if you follow Jazz on Instagram, like, she has the coolest videos of her like in a pool with a TheraBand. Like, she has like all of the physio tools you can imagine. But I want to know about your mental health tools and how you stay resilient, and how it affects your mindset.
You know, it really has changed depending on what recovery process I was going through. And it is incredibly hard. But what I've found is that allowing myself to have a bad day really makes a huge difference. I feel like sometimes as a society, we get into a habit of trying to not have bad days and trying to fix the bad days. but we're not only meant to be happy and we're not only meant to be positive all the time. And you know, it's important to feel all of your emotions and know, you know, how to process them, but not ignoring the other big ones either. And so this time, I feel like my emotional and mental strengths were really tested. Having to recover, in a professional setting is very different than a school setting and being able to be at home. And I mean, it wasn't bad or anything, but it's just a very different environment. You know, trying to rehab to come back to a job is different than trying to get back to ballet class.
Sure.
And so this time I really just tried to feel everything that was going on, because I had a lot of different types of healing happening at one time. Going into the surgical process, I thought I was originally planned to have two surgeries. And then when I woke up from that surgery, I didn't need a second surgery because my surgeon was able to repair everything, which is amazing and great because it put me 2 months ahead of schedule than what we were thinking. But then I was not mentally prepared to not be walking for 6 weeks.
And,
you know, all those things.
Front loading your recovery.
Exactly. And then I had a lot of other personal healing to do. Just through therapy and healing from a broken heart, you know, just all these things that were happening all at one time.
Life things.
Exactly. And so I was like, okay, this is happening. So therapy, especially sports psychology, was a huge thing for me this time. Being able to just like release everything, but also work through what I was going through. And learning what would be the best way for me to, you know, go through that. Another thing that I started doing years ago, and I think this was after my second one, because this was while I was doing the whole support group thing in college. And I talk to my knee all the time when we have, because I realize like our bodies are living organisms, you know, and our organs are all connected. So I'm like, why shouldn't I give you, you know, the love and feedback that I also need? So if it's a bad day, I'm like, it's okay. What do you need? And, you know, we ice, we elevate, we do all the things. And then if it's a good day, I'm like, you did it. Good girl. Good job. You know, I'll do it in the studio. You know,
it's
if I hold a balance for, you know, eight counts, I'm like, yes, good girl. You know, and we keep moving. And I don't know if it more so works for me or if it actually helps my knee, but it really does help to create better days. And then I always tell this to people who reach out to me that are going through their processes as well. I always try to have little goals instead of, I want to get back to dance. I want to be back on point. I want to perform again. It's okay. Today I walked. Today I rode the bike for 15 minutes. Today I did a releve. Today I did a tendu, because having little victories feels way more powerful than just waiting 6 months. For the thing that you've been waiting for.
And like, you can't get to that big goal without doing a releve or a tendu or getting on the bike for 15. Like, it's not going to happen without those little baby steps. So yeah, I love that.
And then the biggest thing that has helped me through this whole process is prayer. That has been one of my one, because even when we went into lockdown, that was deepening in my faith and really trying to like dive into prayer became something that I was like, no, we have the space to do this. We're going to like deepen, you know, our walk in this. And so especially while going through this, while I had what felt like a lot of things taken away from me at the same time, I really just tried to rely on that, because there were a lot of things happening that were out of my control and not for me to have power over. And so with all of those tools, that has also been the biggest guide, as well as my family's love, because they were able to be here for the first like 2.5 months.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes. Which I can't even express how grateful I am for them for doing that.
Oh, so many good things in that. So first takeaway is, you know, I agree with you that our society is really addicted to what this buzzword now is, toxic positivity, right? You know, that like every day is an Instagram post, or every day is like a perfectly styled,
you know, Instagram post or a perfectly done TikTok or, you know, whatever the thing is. And I love what you were saying about sitting, you know, sort of sitting in your bad days and just being like, yeah, it's like accepting that, you know, and not necessarily being defeated by it, but like accepting it and then moving on. I think it's really powerful, for sure. And when you said that you talked to your knee, I laughed so hard because I had ankle surgery when I was 18, the end of my senior year of high school. And I just had the ostragonum ankle surgery, the extra bone that like 70% of us have or something.
Got two of those
too. Yep, I bet. So I had that surgery and I had it done the day after Nutcracker closed. I danced Sugar Plum on my 18th birthday. My birthday's in December. And the next day I was under the knife. And And I had a surgeon who, he specializes in dancers. And I was just very fortunate. He was in my area. He prayed over my ankle before I went under anesthesia. And that was amazing. And then when I came out, my mom was like, okay, like the PT is going to do their job. The ortho did his job. Now you have to do your job.
Right.
You know? And she would tell me to talk to my ankle, whether it was in my mind or out loud. She would like, or she would have me visualize the scar tissue dissolving or like, you know, all of these things. I would look at like an anatomical diagram of ankle muscles and tendons and stuff and like visualize where that healing needed to happen and like actually talk myself through it. So I think that's so powerful. And I know lots of athletes and dancers who use those kinds of techniques, and they're so powerful.
Yeah.
And then lastly, that spiritual component, whatever that means to you as a dancer, as a person, can really, really be valuable in helping you to recover. So I think all that stuff is awesome. I love your toolbox.
Thanks.
Okay. So we've talked about that. So let's shift our mindset a little bit from injury into seasons of health, because I'm a big believer that we all experience seasons in our life, you know, like you might have an injury season and a recovery season and a healthy season, and then something else comes along. So like in that season of health, what are some tools then to keep your mental health strong? Like talking about peak performance, finding balance in your life, perhaps, or something like that. I'd love to hear about that.
I would say really do the things, eat the things, watch the things, you know, that bring you a lot of joy. Especially being in the ballet world, you know, whether you want to or not, we're always trying to quote unquote please the person in front of the room.
Yes.
Which can turn into a very unhealthy sort of cycle of actions. And especially now being a professional dancer, the thing is you're the only person that has your back in that room at the end of the day. So, you know, I eat what I want to eat when my body wants to eat it. I go to yoga if I feel, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I like to be active. So I try and stay active in a lot of different ways and not just in a routine. Granted, if a routine works for you, that's 100% awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really just try and listen to my body and what it asks for. You know, I, like for me, I meal prep just because with my schedule, that's really easy to do. But then sometimes I leave the studio and I'm like, I want a cheeseburger. So
yes,
I can leave and I go get a cheeseburger, you know, and, or sometimes I'll come home and I'll make it myself if I don't feel like going out and spending the money or whatever. But, I just feel like it's really important to keep yourself internally, especially happy, because it's really easy to sort of have things projected onto you based on whatever the environment is around you. And I feel like when I'm not trying to go for a certain goal, when I'm not paying attention to the mirror and all these other things, that's when my body's the most happiest. And I'm like,
that's where you live.
You know, that's where I'm dancing. Cause I go based off of feeling. I don't go based off of what's seeing, because the thing is our mind it's all perception, you know?
Yeah.
And so one day might be a great day and the next day is not, which is totally fine. Yeah. But because of that, I go off of feeling, you know, and mm-hmm. you know what? I've been doing these things. I feel great. My progress in whatever way that looks like, whether it's you get to do a role you want to do, or you decide you've been working towards a triple pirouette, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. If those things are happening, I'm like, cool, you know, that yeah. works for me in that moment mm-hmm. instead of trying to fit a mold that's not for me.
Mm. Where do you find the strength for that? Because I know, like, I'd love to hear where that comes from, because a lot of dancers struggle with sort of not even having, I don't want to say control, but autonomy over their self-worth, you
right.
know, because they rely so much on the person in the room, because that's all they've known their whole lives. Was that something that your mom or your family helped you kind of instill in you growing up, or where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, it was my mom mostly, but and my grandmother, but also just my family in general. You know, they mm-hmm. have always spoken to me with a lot of praise and realizing like my value, and mm-hmm. that was something that I always struggled with, only because I never wanted to be conceited. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I never understood how to be self-confident
and without seeming like, yeah.
Yes. And what I've realized, especially as I've gotten older, is like, you have to be self-confident, you know, like you, you should be very proud of yourself about the things that you've accomplished and who you are and how, you know, we've been made, however you know, whoever you are.
Yeah.
And I think most of it really just came out of frustration, honestly. Mm. I think I hit a point where I was tired of not feeling like enough based on somebody else's standards. And I was frustrated about being frustrated about that. And so I was kind of like, okay, you know what? I prayed about it. I went to therapy and I was like, I don't know how I need to go about doing this. But I know that I don't want to feel like this anymore. And so yeah. it took me choosing to want to see what everybody else saw for myself,
mm-hmm.
Which I feel like, ironically, is what this time period has been for me. Because in a lot of different ways and different scenarios, I had to advocate for myself a lot.
Mm.
And in ways that were very uncomfortable for me, which is funny because I have no problem speaking up for other people. I mean, if someone has an issue, whether you look at my page or you know me personally, you know, I mm-hmm. do not have an issue speaking up for others, but for myself. And I think it stems from the fear of being conceited or being overconfident. But
mm-hmm.
Even when I got this job when I entered into the second company, I was in a really good place. I was really happy with myself. I didn't like put these crazy expectations on myself. And, mm-hmm. but I also was working in a way that I was like, no, you're doing the work, you know, like you're dancing very well. And I was happy with what I was doing. And I think because I had that internal confidence, internal self-love, that mm-hmm. was projected through my dancing. So, mm-hmm. that worked out for me in, you know, getting the job that I wanted. And
yeah.
then that went down because I started doubting myself and going into, you know, the next season. And not to say that this had an effect on my job, but my thinking, you know, comparing the two different times, like I didn't have that same mental space,
yeah.
you know, and yeah. so things were harder, you mm-hmm. know, I wasn't confident in the way that I was moving or anything like that. So
yeah,
I feel like that's been like my huge lesson during this time period of just like, girl, you better own what you have and be
yes.
proud of that, you know,
yeah.
don't second guess it for anything.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I think really it just came out of frustration.
Yeah, it really sounds to me like you found self-confidence through believing in yourself. I know that sounds like super Disney, but believing in yourself, but also being intuitive. I think that's the word that stands out for me a lot with what you're saying, is being intuitive, mm-hmm. whether it's eating a cheeseburger when you need a cheeseburger, or, right. you know, like going to a movie or taking the day off, or like whatever the thing is.
Yes.
Listening to your body cues. But it sounds like you might have gotten quite a lot of self-confidence without the conceit, because those things are coming internally rather mm-hmm. than projected through someone else. You know, yeah. like when we are self-confident because someone else tells us, like, oh, you're an amazing dancer. And then we're like, yeah, I'm an amazing dancer. Then it's like, it's different than if you're yeah. like, oh, I'm really proud of my accomplishments, and I'm feeling really good in my movement and confident in my artistry. And like, those are two completely different things. And it sounds like you've really done the work to get there, which is really cool.
Thanks. Yeah. It's been a long journey, and it's a, you know, ever changing process. Cause as you said, mm-hmm. and I agree, we have our seasons. So as many seasons as I have that are very mentally strong, I also have some that are not as much, but I think the difference now with the ones that I struggle a little bit more is that now I have the tools to navigate that space. And again, I'm not ignoring those thoughts. I'm just like, okay, why are we feeling this way? Okay, let's work through that and figure out how we can move ourselves into a new, you know, a new positive space.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same ocean, just a different boat that you're in. You know, like you've upgraded your equipment.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. So, you mentioned before, like talking about goal setting and liking to have like little goals, which I think is really important to feel empowered and to get closer to the bigger ones. But you've mentioned to me some pretty big goals too. And I'd love to hear about those, talk to you about those. So what are some of those goals that are just so important to you, and how do you work towards them?
So as far as ballet is concerned, I feel like everyone or most people have this dream, but I want to be a principal ballet dancer somewhere one day. And I think at this point, it's more so important to me to dance principal roles rather than to actually receive the title. Mm-hmm. Because what I didn't realize when I was younger is that is a possibility without being a principal, you know?
Absolutely.
Anyway.
And that's why we're here, right? Like, that's why we go to class every day, so that we can dance Aurora or White Swan or, you know, like, whatever the thing is, like that's exactly. at the end of the day, that's why we're here. So that's
right.
That's awesome. I love that perspective.
Yeah. And so that's probably like my biggest one. I would love to be able to travel, whether it's through, you know, guesting, teaching, whatever. I love to be able to combine the things that I love. So to be able to travel around the world and either dance or teach would be amazing. So that is one thing that I hope, whether I figure out how to make happen or that just happens, I really hope for that. Also throughout the pandemic, before we even went into lockdown, I decided that summer I was going to get my wedding and event planning certification, but then we went into lockdown in March. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll
wait a minute.
And so I did that, and at some point within the next 2 years, I really would like to start my own wedding and event planning business.
Fine.
I just have to figure out how that's going to work with our schedule. Yeah. But I love planning in general. And so that's one venture that I'm very excited to take on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love hearing that too, because I've spoken to so many mental health professionals on the show about how like you have to have multiple interests, like ballet cannot be everything, you know, three
it
syllables.
Really can't. It will drive you crazy. Like you need, it's interesting that I've developed that space. One, I think the way I grew up playing with my mom already created that space. I mean, we were always playing with a lot of different toys. I mean, we had Barbies and race cars, and then we had a ball pit, and then we had, you know, like cars to actually drive around in.
Yeah.
But then we also had nail sets and dolls to play with, and what am I thinking of? Oh, paint sets and crayons. You know, like we had so many things
crafts
to do and explore.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I, that just continued to translate through my life. Like I'm always just looking for something else to pick up. And even I've always loved painting. So I started painting a lot when we were in lockdown.
Cool.
And I actually sold one of my paintings a couple weeks ago, which was really,
really
exciting.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's amazing. What kind of, what kind of medium do you work with?
So I paint on canvases and I just use acrylic paint.
Yeah.
Sometimes That's I'll so use cool. gouache paint a little bit, but mostly acrylic.
Wow. Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. Oh, well, yeah, I think that's really, again, it's so important for all of us to be reminded gently that, you know, you can have a career as a professional ballet dancer and you can have other interests as well.
Yes. And other careers even at the same time. There was one dancer in our company. She retired two seasons ago, but you know, she was dancing full time and she had her own baking business and she was making wedding cakes for people all around the country, which was so cool that she, you know, she could do that. And, you know, some people are yoga instructors, some people are gyro instructors, you know, like there's a lot that you can do. And so I agree, like definitely stay open to things that you enjoy doing.
One of the friends of the show, Jordan Nicole of Ballet to Business. Yeah. She loves highlighting, her podcast. You guys should check it out. She's been on the show, but her podcast highlights dancers who are currently, in the professional dance space in some capacity, whether they're dancers, choreographers, directors, you know, teachers, whatever the thing is. But then they also have sometimes a completely unrelated business. But yeah, it's super cool to have that inspiration for everybody. So thanks for sharing that. I love it.
Yeah.
I bet that's a great outlet too for your mental health as well, the art.
It definitely is. Yeah. I mean, especially while everyone was in this space of being completely isolated from the studio and, you know, trying to find these different ways to keep dance in their lives. Like it was nice to be able to not only focus on that, but I still had other things I was enjoying doing or taking up new things. You know, and just putting my mind in other places, excuse me.
Yeah.
Or even when our jobs get hard, because I mean, as much as we love performing and we love coming in every day, it's not always easy.
Yeah.
And so again, it's nice to have a different space to exist in. That's not just what you're putting everything into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So we're coming to a close here and I'm going to pose my two fun closing questions for you. So the first one, I'm going to put you in my time machine and I'm going to turn the clock back to 14-year-old Jazz.
Okay.
And you're going to step out of that time machine and you get to tell her something. What would you say?
What would I tell her? I would tell her to maintain or to find her self-love, her self-confidence. And I would tell her to be open to how our journey is going to to happen. Because I had a very specific way of how I thought that my career was going to happen.
Right? Didn't all of us?
Exactly. And
New York City Ballet and ABT would be real big companies, right? I mean, they are big companies, but they would be like thousands of people.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I would just say to just be open, and that's really for anyone really, but just being open to, you know, how our life and career would, you know, is going to happen. Because it happened in a very beautiful way, but very different than what we thought.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so last one. Now I'm going to give you my magic wand.
Okay.
And you get to wave it, but you only get to change one aspect of the ballet world. What would it be?
I think I would change how bodies are looked at. Because there are all different types of bodies and healthy bodies. And obviously ballet got, uh, or not a certain body type was pigeonholed into what that's supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And that very much is not the case.
Right.
You know, all different types of bodies are able to move and do a lot of really cool things. So if there's anything that I would change, it would be that. Yeah. Just changing the aesthetic and the openness to people in general.
Oh, I love it. Oh, it's so good. There are no wrong answers, but you definitely gave the right ones.
I know. I'm like, there's so many things to change. I know. I feel like that's the biggest one. Like, I feel like also in take care of other categories also, because it would eliminate a lot of the stigmatisms that are just there, you know?
Yes.
Like, oh, okay, this is a person and I think you're a great dancer, so I want you. You know, like, it doesn't matter.
I see what you're doing artistically and I like it.
Yes,
and I want it in my piece. Yeah.
Exactly.
I want it on my stage. I want to share it with the world. It's pretty simple.
Absolutely. You know, you would think.
Oof. Well, we've got a lot of work to get there, but I think I do truly believe, talking to all the people that I've spoken to so far, I think this is, I can't do math right now, my brain, but this is like 40 something. You're the 40 something guest that I've had.
Oh, cool.
So I'm on season 2 right now. So yeah, like 40 something. So out of all those people that I've spoken to and all the messages I've gotten from people through, you know, social media and all that stuff, like I have to believe that even though it's a small fraction of the dance world, like there are great people out there. And they are doing things to change our dance world. So I'm hopeful.
I think that's the really cool thing, is like the work is happening now, you know, in not everywhere, but the places that it is happening, they're happening in very real ways. So I'm optimistic about what that may look like and just hopeful that that work keeps continuing.
Yeah, and that we're raising the next generation to continue that work for us.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest thing, is that like most of us weren't raised with a whole lot of
I feel like we were fighting a lot of those ideologies and trying to change them. And so now we can take what we were fighting and then teach it to other people rather than, you know, they have to keep fighting too.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I love it. Oh, wonderful. All right. So before I let you go, please tell the listeners how they can connect with you. I know you've got some classes you want to share with everybody, but yeah, let's go ahead and share your socials, if you have a website, all that good stuff.
Cool. So I don't have a website, but on my Instagram, it's _theresilientballerina_, and it's the same thing on TikTok. I welcome everyone to my page. I welcome questions and all things like that. So, you know, come join the journey if you wish. And I teach every Sunday at Ballet West at our Trolley Corners location. So I have beginners at 9 a.m. and intermediate advanced at 10:30 a.m. So feel free to sign up. I think I put the link in my bio on my Instagram page. And it's also on our Academy page.
Cool. And I'll put all that stuff, guys, as always, in the show notes for you so you can connect with her. Oh, this has been so fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. So anytime you want to come back on the show, if you have something new to share or some updates on what's going on, I'd love to have you back. But until then, good luck, and I will keep following you.
Yes, thank you so much, Sarah.
Right, bye.
Bye.
What a fun conversation with Jazz today. I learned so much, not just about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and all of the ways that has affected her, but also just some great coping techniques for injury recovery. And it was really an inspiration to me, even though I'm not dancing professionally any longer. I think Jazz is really a gift to the dance world, and I was just really, really proud and excited to have her as a guest on the show. Just a couple of takeaways that I had. One of the big ones was
when she was talking about allowing herself to have bad days. I mean, this is like, wow, like advice anyone could really use, I think, no matter what industry you're in, or if you're still dancing, not dancing, parent of a dancer, whoever it is, because she's really right. Like, you have to allow yourself to feel a wide range of feelings, because that's part of being human. And then learning how to process them, that can be the tricky part. And that's where her, both her therapist and her spirituality and support system with her family really seems to come into play for her. So I think that's a really big, big point, that not only do you need to experience a wide range of emotions, but also be able to process them in a way that results in positive growth. And one of the best ways to do that is with a mental health professional. So I'm going to, again, strongly recommend that, you know, check out mental health resources in your area. Click the link in the show notes. There's a couple of different organizations down there to kind of connect you with your local mental health professionals. There's also some screening tools that are really useful. So yeah, please do reach out to those people in your community. Build yourself a team, build yourself a support system. And yeah, I mean, it's only going to lead to more growth and greater happiness. The other thing that I really loved hearing her talk about was her way that she approaches not just dance, but life, it seems like. She seems really intuitive, and she seems to really trust her intuition, whether that manifests in her deciding she needs a cheeseburger and just listening to her body in that way, or, you know, taking the day off, or discovering that she loves painting. And I mean, she sold a painting recently. That's amazing. Like, it just seems like she really, really does listen to her body and follows her intuition, and it served her really well. So I think that's something that's really interesting that maybe a lot of us could start to incorporate more, and just being aware and listening to what our bodies are telling us. And then lastly, I mean, she talked a lot about building confidence from within. So not being conceited, you know, I guess you could say like staying humble would be the way a lot of people describe that. But finding confidence within yourself that has nothing to do with the person in front of the room watching you dance. Because at the end of the day, that person is not going home with you. That person is not going to be in your life forever. And that is one person's opinion of your dancing, whether it's your artistry, your lines, the way your body looks, and so forth. So I think that's really, really important to keep at the forefront of your mind, is that yes, you want to gracefully take constructive criticism so that you can build yourself to be the best dancer you can be, but also realizing that your confidence has to come from within. It can't come from someone else telling you you're a great dancer. Of course, those are really lovely things to hear, but they can't be our primary source of confidence building. So, and that's another thing that mental health professionals can help you to develop. You know, it's not only, you're not always seeing someone like that in order to fix a problem, but rather to improve on something or build something. So that's just another takeaway that I thought was really, really fascinating and important for us to all keep in mind. Well, I just want to take a second to thank you all for learning with me today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And if you did, go ahead and leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, follow the pod on Spotify, and share it with just 3 friends to get the word out. If you have any questions, particular topics you'd like me to cover, or guests you'd like to hear from, you can email those to me at dancebetterpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow the show, send me a DM on Instagram @dancebetterpodcast. Thank you so much for listening today, everyone. I can't wait to learn with you on the next episode. Bye.